Welcome back, everybody, for another deep dive.
Yeah.
And today we're going to be looking at the future of learning.
Ooh, exciting.
Yeah, it is exciting. You know, what's interesting is that you sent over a chapter to me. It's called Learner Tasks.
Okay.
And it's from like a big book on education and technology.
Right.
And one of the things that just jumps out is that the author is saying that overhead projectors didn't actually change how students learn.
Really?
Yeah. It's basically like they were just delivering the same old information in like a flashier way.
Wow.
Yeah. And they even go so far as to say that calculators are making some math skills like obsolete.
Hmm.
I know. So it makes you wonder, like, in a world where tech is changing everything so fast, what skills do we need?
Right. Exactly.
You know. And thankfully, we have our expert here to help us figure that all out.
Yeah. I think, you know, it is really interesting to consider how much the learning landscape has changed, even just in the last few years.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
The author really, like, hits this point home saying, we've gone from this industrial age where knowledge was kind of, like, fixed to this era where tech is constantly changing everything.
Right.
And there's this quote that, like, stopped me in my tracks. The ability to know information and to be able to recall it on demand is a skill that is losing importance. Like, what?
That's a big statement.
I know. It's a big statement. So what do you think about that? What does that even mean for, like, how we learn?
Well, I think it really challenges the traditional model of education, doesn't it? If simply knowing facts isn't as important, what does that mean for how we approach learning? And the author contrasts what they call like mechanistic education, which is all about memorization,
right,
with the need for skills like adaptability and resourcefulness. You know, I think we can all kind of relate to that now. Think about how much we need to be able to find information quickly and figure things out on the fly.
Oh, totally. Like, remember when that huge storm knocked out power to half the city? My neighbor, who's a total tech whiz, figured out how to use his car battery to charge his phone.
Wow.
And create a Wi-Fi hotspot for the whole block.
That's amazing.
I know. Yeah. And it's like, that's the kind of adaptability this author's talking about.
Yeah, exactly. He wasn't limited by what was happening around him. He used his knowledge and his resources in a creative way to solve a problem.
Totally. It's so different from just like memorizing facts from a textbook.
Absolutely.
It really is. And the author goes on to compare technology strengths to what makes us humans unique. They use this analogy of levers. Like, tech can shout and listen globally, remember tons of data, and follow algorithms at lightning speed. Like, tech is this amazing tool, but it's still just a tool, right?
I think that's a really great way to put it. Recognizing what technology excels at helps us focus on what we bring to the table as humans, things like creativity, critical thinking, and something the author calls tacit knowledge.
Tacit knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I like the sound of that, but I'm not sure I totally get it. What is that?
So tacit knowledge. It's kind of like that gut feeling you get when you just know something is right. Even if you can't explain exactly why,
right.
The author describes it as a deep understanding that comes from experience and immersion in a topic.
Right.
It's hard to articulate, but it's essential for solving complex problems, especially in a world where information is constantly changing.
So it's not just about like knowing the facts. It's about knowing how to use them in different situations.
Exactly.
And I think the author actually have a quote about this. Hold on, let me find it. Here it is. Tacit knowledge arises from the indwelling of the learner in the content. And this indwelling comes about through modeling, coaching, and scaffolding by the educator.
It's pretty dense.
I know, right? Even the quote itself is a little hard to grasp.
Yeah, it's definitely academic language. But essentially what it's saying is that true understanding comes from really immersing yourself in the subject matter.
Right.
And a good teacher can help guide you in that process by providing examples and support along the way.
So think of it like this. Remember that time you like totally nailed that presentation at work?
Uh-huh.
Even though you were super nervous.
Oh, yeah.
You didn't just recite facts. You used your experience and intuition to really connect to the audience.
Right.
And make that information relevant.
I think that's a great example of tacit knowledge in action.
Yeah. And the author argues that this kind of knowledge is becoming even more important in our rapidly changing world.
Absolutely.
Okay. So we've got tech changing the game. We've got this crucial human skill of tacit knowledge. Where does wisdom fit into all of this?
Right.
Because the author mentions this model called DIKW, Data, Information, Knowledge, Wisdom.
Yeah.
Are they saying that wisdom is something different? Can you break that down for me?
Yeah, I think they are making a distinction. The DIKW model is a hierarchy. Think of it like a pyramid. At the bottom, you have data, like raw numbers and statistics.
Right.
Then you have information, which is data that's been organized and given context. Above that is knowledge, which is information that's been understood and integrated. And then at the very top, you have wisdom.
So wisdom is like the top level. What makes it so special?
Wisdom is about applying knowledge and experience to make sound judgments and decisions. It takes into account values, ethics, the bigger picture.
Okay.
For example, a computer can process tons of climate data.
Right.
But it takes human wisdom to understand the implications of that data and then make choices about how to address climate change.
That makes sense. So technology can help us with the data and information part.
Yeah.
But it can't replicate human judgment and wisdom.
Right.
And to develop that wisdom, the author says, we need to shift from just instruction. You know, that traditional model of just pouring information into students' heads
right.
to creating what they call educative experiences. What does that actually mean?
Well, think back to a time when you were really engaged in learning something new.
Mm.
It probably wasn't just passively listening to someone lecture. You're actively involved. You were passionate about it. It challenged you to think differently.
Uh-huh.
That's the essence of an educative experience.
And the author points out that this kind of learning often happens outside of traditional classrooms.
Absolutely.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah.
They even mention how some students are actually more tech savvy than their teachers.
That's right. It really challenges that traditional power dynamic.
Absolutely.
And highlights the fact that learning is a two-way street.
Okay, so if we're moving away from this, like, sit and get model of learning, what does a 21st century classroom actually look like?
Right.
Because the author gives some really interesting examples like project-based learning and something called the upside down classroom.
Yeah.
What are those all about?
These are both models that emphasize active learning and engagement. Project-based learning, or PBL, as it's often called, is about giving students the chance to tackle real-world problems through hands-on projects.
So instead of just reading about something in a textbook, they're actually doing it.
Exactly.
Like, remember that time you learned to bake a cake?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't just read the recipe.
Yeah.
You got your hands dirty.
Yeah.
You experimented.
Right.
And, you know, maybe made some mistakes along the way.
Of course.
But in the end, you learned by doing. And I bet you remember that experience way better than just reading about it in a cookbook.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of PBL. It makes learning relevant and engaging and memorable.
Right. And the author highlights how it allows students to develop essential 21st century skills like collaboration and problem solving.
Absolutely.
Okay, so PBL is all about hands-on learning. What about this upside down classroom thing? Because it sounds kind of wild.
It is a bit of a mind shift from the traditional model. Instead of the typical lecture then homework format, the upside down classroom flips it. So students might watch a video lecture at home to get the basic concepts and then come to class ready to discuss, analyze, and apply that knowledge.
So it's like the classroom becomes a space for active learning and collaboration.
Exactly.
Rather than just passive listening.
Right.
And it's interesting because the author emphasizes that using video isn't just about convenience.
Right.
But it's about creating a more engaging and natural learning experience.
Uh-huh.
They give the example of a poetry teacher who shows videos of poets reading their work.
I see.
It's about leveraging technology to enhance the learning experience.
Exactly. And I think it speaks to how our relationship with technology is changing. We're not just passively consuming information anymore. We're interacting with it, creating with it, and using it to connect with others in new ways.
And the author even talks about having students collect data outside of class.
Oh, wow.
Which then frees up class time for analysis and discussion. It's like they're bringing their fieldwork back to the classroom and working together to make sense of it.
It's really shifting the focus from passively receiving information to actively constructing knowledge.
I love it.
Yeah.
And, you know, these models, PBL and the upside down classroom, are just two examples of how education is changing.
Right.
They both encourage students to become more than just compliant. They help them develop the skills and mindsets they need to become competent, adaptable learners.
Exactly.
This is all so fascinating. And we've covered so much, but I feel like we're just getting started.
I know, me too.
There's still so much more to explore.
Yeah.
And I'm already thinking differently about how I approach my own learning.
I think that's great. And that's what we want, right? For people to be thinking about how they can apply these ideas to their own lives.
Absolutely. We'll dive into those personal applications more in the next part of our deep dive.
Yes.
But for now, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
What are some of the ways you're adapting to the changing demands of learning?
How are you learning differently?
Let us know, because we're all in this together.
Exactly. It's really interesting to think about how these ideas apply outside of a traditional classroom.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Because it's like we're all constantly learning, right?
We are.
And you know what else I thought was really interesting?
What's that?
The author goes into assessment. Like, it's not just about grades anymore. It's about figuring out how to measure, like, real learning and competence.
Yeah, I was struck by that too. You know, they argue that traditional testing isn't always enough.
Right.
We need a more holistic approach that captures those nuances of, like, you know, critical thinking and creativity.
And they even go so far as to say that calculators are making some traditional math skills less relevant.
Yeah. It really makes you wonder, like, if just knowing how to do long division isn't as important anymore.
Right.
What should math education focus on? What kind of mathematical thinking do we need in this world that's driven by data and algorithms?
That's such a good question. But you know, going back to assessment for a second,
Yeah.
the author talks about portfolios as a way to showcase a student's growth over time.
Portfolios.
And I'm kind of like wishing I had kept a portfolio throughout my life.
Yeah, me too. Imagine being able to look back and see how your skills and interests have evolved.
Right, because it's not just like a collection of your best work.
Right.
It's a way to tell your story as a learner. You know, you could highlight projects that you were really passionate about or showcase your problem-solving skills and just demonstrate your growth in ways that a test can't really capture.
And think about how valuable that would be when applying for jobs or for further
Oh,
education.
totally. Because it's like going beyond just listing your qualifications.
Yeah.
It lets you show off your talents and your passions.
Exactly.
So, okay, portfolios are great.
Yeah.
But what about those situations where you do need some kind of standardized measurement? Like, you know, college admissions or certain job fields.
Sure.
The author acknowledges that traditional testing still has a place.
Right. And they also point out how technology can make testing more efficient and effective.
Oh, interesting.
Like, imagine tests that adapt to your level of knowledge and give you immediate feedback
Wow.
and let you retake sections until you've mastered the material.
That sounds so much better than those like stressful one-shot exams I remember from school.
Right.
But it's important to remember that testing is just one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, it doesn't tell the whole story.
Exactly. And that's where those more authentic assessments come in.
Right.
The author talks about evaluating students based on real-world tasks and projects. So like giving them opportunities to actually use their knowledge.
Yeah, I like that. It connects back to those models we were talking about earlier.
Right, like project-based learning.
Exactly. It's not just about the final product,
Right.
it's about the process,
Yeah.
the collaboration, the problem solving.
And teachers can assess that process in so many ways,
Yeah.
like observing group dynamics or reviewing drafts
Right.
or even having students reflect on their own learning.
That's so
It
important.
is. It makes me think about how we often focus on the what of learning. You know, the facts, the content, the answers.
Right.
But we sometimes forget about the how,
The process.
yeah, the process of learning, those critical thinking skills, the ability to collaborate.
Those are the things that matter in the long run.
Absolutely. And the author's insights really challenge us to think differently about how we design those learning experiences.
Yeah.
Not just for like students in classrooms, but for ourselves too.
Absolutely. For anyone who's trying to learn and grow in this crazy world.
For sure. And you know what else really caught my attention in this chapter?
What's that?
The section on metacognition.
Ooh, metacognition.
I'm always fascinated by the idea of like thinking about thinking.
Me too. And the author makes such a compelling case for why metacognition is crucial in the 21st century.
Because it's about becoming aware of our own learning processes, right?
Right. Understanding our strengths and weaknesses,
Yeah.
developing strategies to learn more effectively.
So it's not just about what we learn, but how we learn.
Exactly.
It's like becoming the CEO of your own brain.
I love that analogy.
But the author also says that metacognition is like a key ingredient for adapting to new situations. How does that work?
Well, when we're more aware of how we think,
Yeah.
we're better equipped to recognize when those processes aren't working.
Right.
And then we can adjust our strategies, seek out new information, and ultimately learn more effectively.
Makes me think about all those times I've gotten stuck on a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Whether it's at work or just trying to figure out some new gadget. If I'd taken a step back and really thought about how I was approaching the problem, maybe I could have found a solution faster.
Exactly. Metacognition is about becoming more strategic and self-aware as learners.
Okay.
And you know what's really cool?
Wait.
The author suggests that technology can actually help us develop those metacognitive skills.
Really? How so? I usually think of technology as like a distraction.
I know, right? But think about all the tools we have now. Like, Digital journals can help us track our progress. Mind mapping software can help us visualize complex ideas. Online platforms can connect us with mentors and peers who can give us feedback.
So technology can help us become more reflective about our learning.
Absolutely. It's a game changer.
That is really cool. And it ties back to the idea that technology itself isn't good or bad.
Right.
It's all about how we use it.
Exactly. And if we can use it to become more metacognitive, that's a huge win.
I'm like totally inspired to step up my metacognition game now.
Me too.
But before we get too carried away, there's one more concept from this chapter I want to make sure we cover.
Okay.
The author talks about naturalistic learning.
Oh, yes. Naturalistic learning.
Which sounds pretty intriguing.
It is. It's all about applying those academic skills to real-world problems.
Okay.
It bridges that gap between the classroom and the real world.
So it's kind of like taking what you learn from a textbook and using it to solve a problem that matters to you.
Exactly. And the author uses this continuum to illustrate the different levels.
Okay.
On one end, you have those highly structured tasks, like a typical worksheet.
Right.
On the other end, you have those fully naturalistic tasks, like a student who's interning at a business.
Of course.
And using their skills to solve real-world problems.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because it shows that learning doesn't just happen in a classroom.
Exactly. It can happen anywhere, anytime.
As long as we're open to it.
I love that.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to remember that these skills and mindsets, this adaptability, this resourcefulness, this metacognition, they're not just for students.
Right.
They're for everyone who wants to thrive in a world that's constantly changing.
Totally agree. Yeah. And speaking of thriving, the author also talks about the changing role of the teacher.
Yeah.
In a 21st century learning environment.
Right.
They say teachers are becoming less like sages on the stage and more like guides on the side. What does that even mean?
It's a shift from the teacher being the sole source of knowledge to the teacher facilitating and guiding the learning process.
Got it.
It's about empowering students to take ownership of their learning.
So instead of just lecturing,
teachers
are becoming more like coaches or mentors.
Exactly.
They're creating those learning experiences,
providing
support and helping students connect the dots.
Right. And the author uses the term cognitive apprenticeship to describe this new role.
Interesting.
Emphasizing that teachers need to manage not just the content, but the methods and the social dynamics of the classroom.
Wow. It sounds like a really demanding job.
It is. But the author also points out how rewarding it can be. You know, imagine helping students discover their passions and develop their talents.
Yeah.
That's what makes it all worthwhile.
I bet. It makes me think about some of my favorite teachers.
Yeah.
The ones who really went above and beyond to make learning engaging.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't just like experts in their subject.
Right.
They were also amazing facilitators and mentors.
Those are the teachers who make a difference.
They do. And the author suggests that these models we've been talking about, like project-based learning and the upside-down classroom, can help more teachers take this student-centered approach.
It's about creating an environment where students feel empowered and supported.
Right, where they can explore their own ideas.
Exactly. Yeah. And it recognizes that students aren't just empty vessels waiting to be filled with knowledge.
Right.
They come to the classroom with their own experiences and perspectives.
And sometimes even their own expertise.
Especially with technology.
Yeah. It's really about creating a learning partnership.
I like that. A two-way street.
Where everyone is both a teacher and a learner.
That's a great way to put it.
Huh.
And it really gets to the heart of this chapter.
Uh-huh.
It's about shifting our thinking from a model of transmission to a model of construction.
Okay.
So it's not about pouring knowledge into students' heads.
Right.
It's about creating opportunities for them to build their own understanding.
Through active engagement.
Exactly.
And technology can be such a powerful tool in that process.
Absolutely. Not just as a source of information, but also as a tool for collaboration and creation.
And even reflection.
Right.
You know, one thing that really stood out to me in this chapter was this emphasis on creating products that matter.
Yeah.
As part of the learning process.
Right. It's not just about completing assignments.
It's about creating something meaningful.
Something that has an impact.
Something that goes beyond the classroom.
And the author gives some great examples.
Yeah.
Like a research project that tackles a real-world problem. Or a piece of writing that expresses a unique perspective.
Right. Or a performance that moves and inspires others.
It's about applying what we've learned to create something of value.
And it makes the learning process so much more engaging.
Absolutely.
Right.
When you know your work has a purpose, you're more likely to put your heart into it.
Totally. It's about finding that intersection of passion, purpose, and learning.
Exactly. And that's something we can all strive for.
You know, this whole conversation has really got me thinking about how I can use these ideas in my own life, even outside of formal learning.
Me too.
Like, how can I be more metacognitive?
That's a great question.
How can I create more of those educative experiences for myself?
Right. How can we all do that?
And how can I use what I know to create products that matter?
Those are great questions. I think it starts with being intentional about our learning choices.
Okay.
Like, what are we curious about?
Yeah.
What problems do we want to solve? What skills do we want to learn?
And then we can start exploring those different learning pathways.
Right. And look for opportunities to collaborate with others.
Learn from mentors and peers.
Exactly.
To share our own knowledge with the world.
It's a journey we take together.
I love that. And I think that's a perfect way to wrap up this deep dive.
I agree.
This chapter has given us so much to think about.
So many ideas about how we can approach learning in this crazy 21st century.
It really has. And I hope you're all feeling as inspired as we are to become more competent and adaptable learners. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everyone.